Good evening. We're going to call to order the meeting of the Kitsap County Planning Commission for Tuesday, July 31st, 2018. It is 5:30 p.m. for the record, and we'll start with introductions down on my far left.
Aaron Murphy, North Kitsap.
Kim Allen, South Kitsap.
Jim Swenson, South Kitsap.
Richard Shattuck, Central Kitsap.
Tom Nevins, North Kitsap.
Joe Phillips, Central.
Care Ann Gonzalez Harless, South Kitsap.
And Gina Buskirk, Central Kitsap. The first item of business is adoption of the agenda. I believe everybody received one either electronically or via hard copy today. Do we have a motion to adopt tonight's agenda?
Move to adopt the agenda.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Is there any discussion about the agenda? No, hearing no discussion. All those in favor of adopting tonight's agenda, please raise your hand. The next order of business is approval of the minutes from the July 17th, 2018 meeting, and that also included a public hearing on that date. We also received these in advance via electronic copy. I do have a hard copy today. There are a few amendments that were suggested by staff after reviewing the hearing. So I think I'm going to go ahead and make a motion on each of those amendments to allow everybody to discuss, and then if anybody has any amendments they would like to add. I move to amend the first one, which is for anybody following along, page 3, lines 1 through 10. As a correction, it should state Jim Bolger, DCD Assistant Director, notes there is no formal criteria or process. The Board of County Commissioners considers items on an individual basis. In this instance, Board of County Commissioners considered that the county action contributed to the split zoning and decided to sponsor this case. If it was a single landowner or a different piece of property not subject to a previously completed application and action that resulted in a split zone situation, those requests would likely be taken in as an individual site-specific application. So that is the recommended correction or amendment to the minutes that I'm moving to make. Do I have a second on my motion?
I'll second.
We have a second. Is there any discussion about this? Do we all recall what this was referring to? Hearing no discussion. All those in favor of adopting this correction cited in number 1 that I just recited, please raise your hands. All those opposed, and any abstentions? Then my second motion to the minutes is contained on page 4, lines 28 through 30, and they should be corrected as follows. Mr. Bolger notes that DCD is recommending deferral to the next regular CPA update process, and the Board of County Commissioners has discretion to allow for area-wide amendments each year. Do I have a second on that amendment?
Second
from Ms. Allen. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion. All those in favor of adopting this correction to the minutes, please raise your hand. And anybody opposed? And an abstention. The only abstention we have is Mr. Murphy. And finally, on page 4, lines 31 through 33 is a motion to correct as follows. Mr. Ward notes that while the current application seeks to remedy the situation for the current landowner, the amendment process must look at current and future uses. Do I have a second for that amendment? Mr. Swenson for a second. Any discussion about that amendment to the minutes? All those in favor of adopting that amendment, please raise your hand. Anybody opposed? And abstentions? All right, thank you. Now, with having those amendments suggested, is there anybody else that has a suggested amendment to the minutes? Hearing no further motions or suggestions. At this time, do we have a motion to adopt the amended minutes?
Move to approve the amended minutes.
And do I have a second on that?
Second.
Second, Ms. Allen. All those in favor of adopting the minutes as amended this evening? Any opposed and abstentions? Mr. Murphy. All right. So the minutes are approved and adopted. All right, we're going to move on to the public hearing portion. We did start a public hearing on our last meeting, which was July 17th. At that time, we adjourned until this evening for further public comment. Just some reminders about the public hearing. There is a sign-in sheet at the back of the room for any member of the public who wishes to speak or provide comment on the 2018 comp plan amendment process. The clerk is collecting or will be shortly collecting the list and the names of the people. If you are here, observing and you decide that you do wish to speak or to testify, that's also completely fine. Either go back to the list in the back or just make sure before we close out the public hearing today that you flag it so that we know that you're here and wish to speak. We do allow people to, we're going to have everybody talk about the whole group of amendments at one time so that we're not trying to parse out how many minutes for this or how many minutes for that. Last time we found that 3 minutes was sufficient for discussion. And there are some timers over there. It'll give you a warning light when there's 1 minute left. So just keep an eye on that. It is helpful to us here to have an idea of which one you're talking about. So if you can identify, I'm here to testify about the Yulin Tree Farm or whatnot. It helps us track it a little better because we have a binder and we can flip to that section of the amendments to review ourselves. Please make sure you do come up to the podium and speak clearly because we are required to record all of the testimony and the meeting tonight. We'll ask that when you do come up to speak on the record, you clearly identify your name and your hometown as well as the items you wish to speak to. And again, I did the reminder last time, but I'll do it again for the commission tonight. Tonight, the commission sits as a neutral listening function. We're not deliberating this evening, so we may have some clarifying questions, but we'll be mostly listening to what you have to say and taking notes on it, or it's all recorded so we can review that at a later time as well. We may have some clarification questions for you. But again, we won't make any determination or decisions this evening during the public hearing portion of the meeting. So that being said, we're going to go ahead and open the public hearing. I think I have a list. Okay. Mr. Douglas Lambert, would you wish to come forward?
Hello, good evening. My name is Douglas Lambert. I live on Skipping Stone Lane in Bremerton, Washington. I live right around the corner from, there's a site-specific amendment, 1800490. It's Culberson. And I am speaking opposed to you drafting this amendment. I am reading the staff report and recommendations for this amendment, and I don't feel it adequately addresses the true nature of where this new proposed quarry is going to be. All the references indicate Sherman Heights, the entrance to the existing KRM. This thing is down Sand Dollar Road, and we several residents that live on Sand Dollar Road are very concerned about dust, blasting, noise. Right now, I live a mile or better, and I can hear that quarry. If you put a new quarry, I'm going to live within 1,000 feet of a quarry. There's people that live on that road are going to be within a couple hundred feet of the boundaries of that quarry. So you're changing the zoning, you're putting a quarry in our backyard, and then do we have any protection from the noise it's going to generate, the dust? It's a huge concern. We hear it now. It's an existing quarry. There's a law that's the RCW. It pretty much gives them protection after they're an existing quarry. It says that they cannot be fined within reason for the dust and the noise and stuff. They're not an existing quarry yet. So when we're down that road and we have all these residences down this road, it's a huge safety concern. They could be blasting 200 feet from the access to our residences. And I think that, I don't know if anybody has came out and looked, or I would be willing to show anybody that would willing wanted to come out and look myself and say, a picture's worth a thousand words when you come up here and look on this ridge and look at what they're doing and how close it is to a lot of homes. And I just built, I just spent $500,000 on a new home up there. And it's, if I'd never be able to sell it when people are sitting there listening to blasts going off and crushers going all day. And that's another concern, is our property valuation. So with that being said, I think that the plan, it needs getting looked at again. I'm trying to be specific and still squeeze it in. But there's just a lot of things on here. There, you know, it talks about Sherman Heights Road. Sherman Heights Road is a long way from this thing. It talks about it talks about the mixed use of land real quick. I know I got less than a minute left, but there's a utility substation, so they're going to have to drive from the current quarry, make a road past that utility, and there's a huge power lines that run through there, so they're going to have to drive dump trucks or whatever all the way through there picking up dust to just to get to the site. So they're going to have to build a road back in there and everything. And there's a lot more to it than Sherman Heights. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Elsie Zach.
Good evening. My name's Elfie Zach, and I live on 2654 Skipping Stone Lane. I've lived there over 30 years. I have the property adjacent to the 65 acres. That, and I wrote this up and so I could keep this moving and not waste any of your time. I've lived there since the mid-80s, and we built a home on 30 acres, butted up to the Bremerton watershed, and this 65 acres. Wildlife is abundant. Deer, bear, foxes, bobcat, owls, eagles, just to name a few of the animals. At the time they opened the Kitsap reclamation and materials, we only heard noise on a few occasions. But 10 years ago, they started mining, and we started having blasting issues. My husband spoke to them, and they made some difference. It was reopened 20 years ago as Kitsap Reclamation and Materials. The old quarry had closed due to blasting and rock that had landed in a home, the corner of Highway 3 and Sherman Heights. I have dealt with trucks, noise pollution, cracking sheetrock, cracked concrete, and a constant concern of my 500-foot well shifting because of blasting. I am concerned about the aquifer environment, extensive damage to our homes with the expanding of the quarry, which will be at my back door, as well as my property values. I'm concerned about the aquifer environment and extensive damage to our homes with the expanding quarry, I've expanded the quarry would be attached to my 6 acres of wetlands and bog. There are springs all over our hillside that keep us from overbuilding because of the runoff into Gorse Creek and endangering the salmon runs. My area has 30 new homes on Sand Dollar Road, including another 40 on the drawing board, for the development. We are zoned for restricted development. The hell site has been logged a few years ago, and you can see it plainly as you come from Port Orchard to look on Sherman Heights area. The increased amount of noise pollution, mineral movement, and the truck diesel fuel that would be generated from this project could have significant impact upon the ecosystem around it. Specifically, I am worried about the salmon spawning grounds along Gorse Creek as well as the Sinclair Inlet. Due to the additional sediment deposit and will flow into the systems that other point sources could cause the salmon to be affected negatively. Other issues such as noise and fuel pollution concerns me greatly and the wildlife that it already exists in this area. I would be more inclined that the wildlife stays around my property that have to relocate due to the fear of the large truck blasting ours. With these concerns, I believe it would do the project planners and the people who already live around this property a great benefit if a CEPA environmental impact assessment was done before determining if a permit should be issued. In closing, please do not enlarge the reclamation and materials into a quarry. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Deborah Lambert?
Hello. My name is Deborah Lambert. I am a resident of Bremerton, Washington, have been all my life. I am representing the group of homeowners up on the Sherman Heights Skip and Stone Lane area opposing Culbertson Reclamation Proposal. The Kitsap County Community Development Report fails to mention community and on Sand Dollar and Skip and Stone Lane, which will be approximately 300 feet to 1,200 feet from the proposed site. That is, several homes will be 300 to 1,200 feet from blasting, heavy trucks, the noise, the pollution with the dust. It's very upsetting. Anyways, our community already experiences noise pollution and home damage during the operating hours. You can be outside in our yard and you hear the equipment from that quarry from open to close every day. And in their plan, they're talking about extending hours. I can't even imagine it. We already hear it every day for that entire time period. Moving 60 acres closer to us is a big concern because, as was mentioned, there's a lot of wildlife, natural springs, bogs, wetlands in that area that will be affected. We have several species of animals. We've got bears, foxes, eagles, just you name it, it is up there. And they are living in these bogs and in this forested area because of all the development that's happened around those lands, driving them closer into our properties. So additionally, there's, as was mentioned, the large power substation. That substation is several acres, and it is a crisscross jigsaw, dot to dot, I mean, up the hillsides through our properties. So I'm concerned about that also because for this area, for this county, that is a major substation. And I want to know if any impact statements have been done as far as the effects that the blast will have on that substation. Because seriously, probably all our homes in here are powered by that substation. Additionally, as was mentioned again, the Bremerton watershed is adjacent to this. So that is not only our power source, our water sources for a lot of people that don't have wells. The infrastructure on the roadways up there, in the report it mentions that there's not an issue with it. That, sorry to say, is bogus. We already have hours and hours of backup every night. They are slated to build another 40-plus homes up there just in that one area that they mentioned in the report, let alone the rest of the area. we have private wells, we have private septics that are going to get affected by these ground waves entering the structures. So how are they going to be accountable for this? Are they going to take in, have to, you know, put the seismic measuring devices at each of our homes so that we can, you know, report back whether or not, you know, they're exceeding the limitations? What recourse do we have when our sheetrock and our foundations are cracking, which these people have? Seriously, my neighbor there is going to be 300 feet out his back door. They're already down the road on Sherman Heights Road, over a mile away, and he's got cracking walls in his house from where they're at currently, let alone 300 feet outside his door. And this is his retirement home. This is her retirement home. This is our retirement home. Several neighbors up there are elderly, and this is their retirement home. They can't afford fixes. They can't, you know, just move because their property values are going to plummet. So I would like to request a detailed SEPA environmental impact statement occur prior to application, then another public hearing, because this is a serious issue. And again, I too welcome you. Come up, take a look. Take a look at this big power substation. Take a look at all this wildlife bogs. Take a look at the neighbors' damages. Oh, sorry.
I'm going to ask you to wrap it up.
All right. Anyways, thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. The next person we have is Jack Stanfield. And for the commissioners, Mr. Stanfield provided each of us a letter in a packet of information. And so I just want to make sure to draw that to your attention if you want to review it as he's speaking.
Yeah, hi, I'm Jack Stanfield. I'm the president of Chico Creek Task Force. I live on North Lakeway, and I'm here to speak about the Yulins, what they're trying to do up there. So I first want to address the comprehensive plan amendment application. And on here, you can see that Yulin has marked on the Lake Pond Reservoir, yes, and name of the body of water, they say, is the Beaver Dam Lake. Can get this turned on?
Unfortunately, we are having power problems in the evening, so this evening, so the only thing we have working is the computer and the recording system.
Let me know, okay. Anyway, well, you should have a copy there of Yulin's map here. And what Mr. Marin called out to you was the Beaver Pond, which is probably well over a mile from Quarry City. What they never have called out is the one you can see there that's wetland 4. There's a W4 on the map, and this is 17 and a half acre, the real Beaver Pond up there, and it was left out of this entire process since 2007. And you can get that information. I've only included a couple of pages here out of Dr. Cook's assessment about that wetland 4 up there. Okay. And then I want to talk about the trails. Staff also wrote in their report that those are public trails up there on Yulin's tree farm. And that's entitled the Yulin Cup Condition Public Trail Legal Review. And it's Eric Baker's. And as you can see, these are not public trails. Okay? Those belong to Yulin. He controls who can go on there and who doesn't go on there. Once again, the county says these are not public trails. So they're not public trails. And how do I know? Because since 2011, Mr. Yulin has kept us off of there. This past December, there was on the Kitsap Sun, Josh Farley takes people around a lot of places. So there was a trip up to the falls there, up on Dickerson Creek, the falls. And so I sent an email because if you're a member of the Chico Creek Task Force, you can't go up there on the trails, okay? So I sent an email to Mr. Myron and asked him if it'd be okay if I accompanied Josh Farley and the Kitsap Sun reporter to Dickerson Creek Falls on December 30th. Well, he wrote back and says, thanks for asking. We remain hopeful that one day we will have mutual respect relationship with Chico Creek Task Force and can reopen the tree farm to you for recreational access, as we have done to others, as we have done with other past members of your group. So here's the word. You turn your head, don't look at anything, and you can go on there for a walk, okay? And so anyway, as you said, our attorney, Mr. Seidel from Bricklin Newman in Seattle here, they're addressing the agreement. That's way above my, I have no idea on that one, okay? So there's a seven-page letter here, and the last paragraph says, there are never any concurrent rezone ordinance. Instead, Yulin is seeking a post hoc rezone ordinance. This is a violation of the county code's procedure for development agreements. Yulin should have sought this rezone at the time the agreement was signed. The county has no obligation and would, in fact, be violating the county code on development agreements to grant it now. That's...
Thank you very much.
I don't believe that the agreement is actually part of the record. Is that something you plan to submit to the record so we've got it?
I've been told that the agreement is that part of the record at this time.
I it's not in our material, so I don't know if we've seen it.
They say it's online in their hands.
So I can address that. So it's not included in your binders currently. It's referenced in the staff report. Commissioner Gonzalez Harless requested that and several other documents. Your request. So that will be provided as part of that response.
It'll be part of the record
to that. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Canfield.
Thank you.
The next person we have on our list is.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike McCowan. I live in Paul's Bow, and I'm the owner of one of the parcels in question at the George's Corner Lambert minor adjustment. I'm speaking in favor of this adjustment in that when I purchased the property in 2014, we were unaware that there were three zones on the property. We've been told there were two, and then when we went to begin our development process, we were told that there were three. And as I've been wading back through the process, it's been a challenge trying to figure out how did we end up with three on there. As I went back and got some of the original things back in 2004, the original George's Corner Boundary Advisory Group put four alternatives forward to the Planning Commission, which was then one of those was adopted and sent on to the County Commission. Commissioners, but one of those criterion that they chose to put forward was that the four alternatives were designed based on the following criterion: bodies of water, streets and highways, landforms and contours were taken into consideration, irregular boundaries were avoided by following parcel lines, and the boundary line was delineated primarily to pre-1990 development. All that was considered and sent on to the Planning Commission, and they used the same criterion, except that when the boundaries got drawn, they didn't draw them to the parcel lines. The parcel lines had been submitted as a preliminary, but not approved until after the thing. So they had a Lambert proposed, but it didn't have any parcels to follow because they were splitting a larger piece of property. And then when those two things got put together, they didn't match them together. So our property ended up with three zones according to the county, two zones according to the people who actually did the zoning and were there at the time, and to the folks that walked it with me who were there that many years ago and said these specific parcel lines were drawn to because there were some wetlands that were significantly further away. They had left enough room to make sure there were plenty of setbacks to withdraw the neighborhood commercial boundaries to be completely away from the wetlands areas. Because the Lambert was not matching of those parcel lines, it resulted in Lot D having some commercial, neighborhood commercial, onto the wetlands that were delineated as wetlands, and that led to some challenges with my neighbor who was trying to develop that a couple of years ago. So this adjustment would allow it to be back toward where it originally was intended and take care of the wetlands issues and stop this three zones on one piece of property and let me move forward with my putting of, a, of an eye care place on there. Thank you.
Brad Wiggins.
Good evening. My name is Brad Wiggins. I live in Port Orchard. I'm the Deputy Fire Marshal for South Kitsap Fire. And I'm speaking on behalf of the Oliver Hanley Amendment from a commercial, high residential to a commercial. A little bit of history on that place. We've been inspecting, the fire department's been inspecting them as a business since 1999. And we concluded our inspections in 2013 when the county fire marshals took it back over of doing inspections. We've always considered them as a commercial occupancy there for many, many years. On the other side of it, the noise from them is very limited. We never hear them over there. We're actually the noisy neighbors, I guess to say, with all the fire trucks and all the drilling that's going on there. So basically, we're just in the fire department's in favor of making it into a commercial spot for him to have trucks and stuff there. Low impact to us, low impact noise. My office is right next to that, and I can say that any noise we hear is generally done by 7:30 in the morning, and they're done. Not many trucks come and go, and it's like another half hour in the late afternoon that they're parking, and that's the noise you hear. On the other hand, us, we 24 hours, 7 days a week, we're making noise. So putting in high residential in that space, that was become one, is problematic for the fire department. We have apartments across the street from us, housing right next to us. We constantly get a few complaints about all the extra noise we have because we're noisy. Starting up chainsaws, doing drills, that's our main headquarters station for drilling, so we drill a lot. And it just makes some noise. So that's what I have. Right.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Bill Palmer.
For the record, my name is William M. Palmer. I'm here representing Oliver and Morgan Hanley. And I wanted to highlight a couple of things in my letter. Hopefully I can get that done within a three-minute time frame. it appeared to me that when I read staff report in March of this year and then subsequently before these proceedings, that the staff had characterized the uses taking place on Mr. Hanley's site one way when they could have looked at their own commercial code and found that the uses that are taking place and have for about 40 years on this site also are compliant with the commercial zone. And what I did in the first part of the letter is I highlighted those seven subsections of section 410 that would allow if the zoning was in place would permit everything that he's doing on the site. Also, I thought it was instructive that you had a review of the history of the site. So you have a second letter attached to my cover letter, and it was written to Scott Diener of the staff relative to the history of this particular site. And I wanted you to take note of one of the points I covered in that letter. It has to do with what happened on or about September 8, 1995. At that, probably Jim Swenson, maybe Karan, are the only two people that would remember what happened on that date. But that's when the hearings board invalidated Kitsap County's comprehensive plan and zoning. That worked to be a reset for all uses in the county as to the date of nonconformity, and that was later reconciled by the county in October that year. So there was a little over a month period of time when the county had no zoning and no comprehensive plan. The thing that also was apparent in the staff report is a recommendation to postpone until this particular application to next year. I'm concerned about that for two reasons. One, I think we presented a valid application this year, meeting all of the applicable criteria. Second of all, postponements without a date certain are problematic, and Kitsap County has staff so far has not done anything more than suggest that it might be this application might be postponed for further study until next year. In one sense, we don't oppose it, but an open-ended postponement concerns us greatly. And I reiterate the point I made a minute ago. I see no reason to postpone it. If the study the county wants to do takes place next year and there's a need to change the zoning, they can do that then.
Thank you. Phil Strzok.
Good evening. I'm Phil Strzok from Paul's Bow. I'm representing KRM Quarry. I'd like to respond to a few of the comments that were made here earlier. Specifically, the access will continue to be off Sherman Heights Road. There's no plan or no intent whatsoever to be using Quarry Street or Sandollar Lane. The crushing plant is also intended to stay in the existing quarry and not move closer to the Culbertson property. The material would be removed and then transported down to the crushing plant. The KRM just completed a pretty comprehensive air quality study in accordance with Department of Ecology and EPA standards, and the site met all the air quality emission standards. There was a comment about fish-bearing streams. There is a non-fish-bearing tributary that's on the far northeast corner of the site, but there's no fish-bearing stream on the site. The site does not discharge to a salmon stream or Gorse Creek, for that matter. There's no wetlands on the site to our knowledge. Certainly none are mapped as part of the public domain wetland mapping. But certainly that study would be done as part of a future application when that time comes. There was a comment about the power lines. BPA has an easement from both KRM, the owner of KRM, and Culbertson. And that easement specifies notification requirements for blasting, and those have always been met. The quarry does monitor every blast. Every single blast that's made at the quarry is monitored and compared to the Federal Bureau of Mine blasting standard. And there's been 65 blasts over the last 4 years and about almost 200 measurements. And there was one measurement that was barely over the standard. And this is at 300 feet from the actual blast itself and probably 100 feet from the boundary of the mine. So the mine has tried to be a good neighbor and has met all the standards and has some letters from several adjacent landowners to that effect. So we think it's an appropriate site, and the applicant's committed to doing the necessary studies at a point when an application is brought forward for a mining permit. So if you have any questions, I'd be glad to respond to them. Thank you. Yes.
I have a question for Mr. Strzok. Were you the author of the CEPA checklist?
I was not. The checklist that's in the – I prepared a checklist for the application, and there was a checklist I think that was also prepared by staff. That was in the
on page record. 21 of the checklist. There's a section relates to effects on land uses, and it says the proposal is not is not likely to affect land use in the area. The property is located in an area very compatible with the proposed activity. I suggest maybe somebody might want to take another look at that statement based on the testimony I've heard for the last two hearings.
Yeah, I think that clearly there's some concern. Absolutely. I think there's also substantial perimeter to the site that is undeveloped forest land. So I guess there's several different ways to look at that. But I hear your concern, and I would just ask that any of the landowners that are concerned about this, they're feel free to call me. I think that quarry operators would be glad to share with them the seismograph results and talk with them about what they're concerned about and how the operation can be done in a way that addresses and mitigates the concerns that they have. So there is, I think, a sincere desire to be a good neighbor there.
Ms. Gonzalez, a question for you.
A couple years back, county reviewed and adopted an ordinance for gun ranges dealing with noise, impacts to neighbors. So you're going to be going through a conditional use process.
Right.
So what kinds of things can you mitigate the noise and damage that comes, not just the standards, but what can you do above and beyond that?
Well, there's a variety of ways. It depends on the issue or the impact that you're concerned about. So let's say dust. So the way the roads are developed and maintained is important. You know, when it's dry, that you provide the watering and the other dust suppression methods that address that. For noise, typically for a mine proposal, a noise study is performed and noise modeling is done where the sensitive receptors are evaluated relative to where the noise will be produced. Then there's ways to structure your buffer setbacks or screening berms or a variety of techniques to.
So you would be looking beyond just the standard. You would be going when you'd be proposing something different.
Better. Well, I think the standard is the place where you typically start. And if through the conditional use process, if it's determined that that baseline standard is not sufficient to address the county's requirements.
Well, that's kind of what happened with the gun clubs, and they adopted a noise, you know, limit, I guess, and times that,
right,
you know, to ease the impact on the neighbors, and so that's what I'm kind of getting at. Is,
right, right.
You know, they had to do something more than just the standard.
Right. Well, I think that's a good comment. I think the conditional use process provides that mechanism to sort that out. You know, the varying, there's information out there that discusses, you know, the standard relative to people's thresholds of hearing or dust or blasting or whatever that impact is.
Yeah, so there was quite a detailed study that the right. county paid for that dealt with the impact of noise on neighbors and just their well-being, and we adopted that for guns, and also I think it dealt with, they like to have cannons and different kinds of things that blast on those ranges. So I just am trying to see what you have in your industry that deals with mitigation that's, you know, better than the standard.
Well, the exceeding the standard is really based on the type of mitigation that you design. Right. So if you're modeling or you're trying to bring noise levels down to a certain level, and you can do that by, say, a setback of 200 feet and a berm that's 20 feet high. Well, if you can bring it down to, say, a level that's 50% less than the standard, which is below, say, a nuisance level, then perhaps you have a 300-foot buffer and a 30-foot berm. And so there's varying levels of mitigation that you can do to achieve the outcome that you're looking for. So.
I think it's on Ms. Allen's hand, and then we have Mr. Shattuck.
Thank you. Two questions. One, you mentioned the ingress and egress, that it wasn't going to be near the streets that those neighbors live on. Can you identify what the truck route will be in and out of the property?
Well, the truck route, the primary truck route, with the trucks will go over the scales and enter out onto Sherman Heights Road. And Sherman Heights Road does have some peak hour issues. Everybody knows that. Everybody's trying to get around the Gorse bottleneck. And, you know, that issue was in a that issue was relevant when the quarry started up 20 years ago. So, you know, how do you mitigate that? That's probably as much a regional conversation as it is a site-specific. There's turn lanes. There's all kinds of mitigation techniques that can be applied at the site to help, you know, ensure that it's safe and that it doesn't unduly disrupt kind of the poor operations that already happen between the hours of like 3:30 and 4:30 every day, which are really the tail end of the operations period anyway for the quarry. So,
thank you. And my second question had to do with hours. One of the people who testified earlier said that there was a proposal to expand the hours from the existing quarry. What is that proposal?
Well, that may have been there. I don't think there's any intent to make the operating hours longer. I think it's the operating duration would be extended, you know, compared to the existing quarry's reserves would be exhausted in a few years. And if the expansion area comes into play, then the duration of the operation might extend into the future. But the day-to-day operating hours wouldn't change.
So how long would the duration be extending with this expansion?
Well, it would depend a lot on the mitigation that's ultimately developed, since that would affect the mining volume, the footprint. But it could be 10 years, you know, something like that, maybe 10 years, maybe 15, maybe 5. But something in that range. I mean, we're talking a significant period of time, but not decades into the future.
Okay. Thank you.
I just want to make sure we're all understanding what's proposed here. It's not just the mineral overlay, but as you understand, we're also changing the county code to change aggregate removal from a permitted use to a conditional use permit, right?
That's
your understanding
that. Yes,
part
absolutely.
Of that. And so what we've heard, I think, from many of the people here is they'd like a more complete review. They want an opportunity to comment on specific aspects of your operation. And is it your understanding that will be required as part of this conditional use process before you can operate?
Absolutely. Understood. Yes.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, just one clarification from staff. Mr. Svensson, you asked about the SEPA checklist. It was prepared by the applicant in red. You'll see there are some staff corrections that have amended.
I've reached the end of the current list that I have for anybody who already signed in to testify. There, I see a hand raised in the back. If you'd like to testify, can you please come forward? Good evening. Can I have you identify yourself by your name?
Hi, I'm Mark Maurin. I work for Euland Tree Farm, and I live in Puyallup. I just want to touch base on a couple things and just make sure we're all on the same page in terms of understanding. The wetland four that Jack mentioned, that's also Beaver Dam Lake, they're one and the same. They're not different. The trails are open to the public, and we have been working with the county to get that formalized through an easement process, but we're working on that. Two things that I wanted to bring up is wanted to be clear that we went through a CUP process to get these two quarries permitted, and they were permitted, and it was challenged and went to Superior Court, and we won that challenge. We did a development agreement which went through a hearing and a process to get us where we did. We discovered when we went through the CUP process that we weren't able to mine under forest resource land. And at the time, the county agreed that said the next time we go through the comp plan process, we'll just go back and we'll change to allow mineral resource to be done in the forest resource land. I stood before you on a couple hearings as well as the county hearings and requested that at that time, in talking with staff in the county, they agreed all we needed to do was drop a footnote under the forest resource zone that said that you can only do it 2 acres for forest road purposes. And by dropping that, that would open up forest resource lands and be fine. It was a small amendment, a small change. It got dropped in the whole process. So they said, well, we'll tell you what, we'll go back when we open it up for the first time, and you can reapply. And so we reapplied, and they suggested that we do a mineral resource overlay, which we thought we should have done to begin with. So that's why we're before you. We're not expanding anything. All we're doing is legitimizing what we've already been approved through a legislative process to happen. So I just wanted to make sure that we're really clear. And the other thing is, we're not asking for a zoning change. It's still going to be forest resource land. All we're asking is for mineral resource overlay, which is allowed under the Growth Management Act, and the Growth Management Act encourages preservation of mineral resources, and it's allowed under the county comp plan and encouraged to protect mineral resources. We're just trying to follow what the state and the county rules and reg allows us to do. Thank you.
Mr. Morin, thank you for your testimony. Mr. Stanfield, when he testified, referenced and he submitted to us a letter saying that the Chico Creek Task Force members were banned from public access to the trails. Is that correct? Could you speak to that?
Yeah, that's true. What happened was, it was pretty controversial. There was some concern by some citizens when we got approved with a comp plan. Not the comp plan, but the CUP. Once we were approved, within a three-month period, we had Jack turned us in for a DDT dump. So I got state and federal people all excited. Nothing came of that. He turned us in for asbestos dump, got everyone excited. All it was a 4-inch pipe left over from Kitsap Lake Water District, and they ended up saying, just leave the pipe there. It's 4 inches. It's only 4 feet long. Someone, and I'm not accusing anyone of anything, someone actually opened up our water monitoring wells and poured gasoline in it, which, I mean, we've been monitoring several times, and gasoline just doesn't appear in a monitoring well. So at that point, and then he went to the paper and said that we're going to ship our rock to China, which is kind of a little bit far-fetched. And so what we did was we said, hey, we met with them and we said, you know, if you're going to come out, if you aren't able to come out and enjoy the property like everyone else, if you're out there looking for problems, then we don't want you on there. And so that's why he's not allowed to get on there. We're hoping we're going to get to the point where, you know, he can come out and enjoy the piece of property like tens of thousands of other people do every year, but we're not at that point yet.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hammond, do you want to speak? I need you to come forward and more than welcome to testify, but I need to come up here and put your name on the record and where you live or your hometown.
Oliver Hanley, and I live in Port Orchard, and I'm kind of a third wheel here with this Kitsap Reclamation. But one thing that hasn't been covered with them, I love Kitsap Reclamation because back in the 80s and 70s, tile cement roofs were very popular. And going out to the Kitsap County dump with a load of tile is pretty cost prohibitive. And I love going into Kitsap Reclamation and being able to recycle these tile roofs, dumping the cement there. Also, everybody in the wintertime drives on these roads, and the source for crushed rock there is just such a benefit for us. But the recycling aspect, and we do tear once in a while, I buy houses and renovate them, and the cement is so hard to get rid of. And I don't know if people realize that Kitsap Reclamation does a wonderful job on recycling, and then I buy the used concrete and use for roadbed and things. So that's a big asset they are for this community,
and I'm probably one of the few that own and drive a dump truck here connected with my roofing, but it's a rough thing running that place, and it's a very big asset to our county.
One final call. Is there anybody else present who would like to testify at the hearing this evening? Hearing that, I'm going to go ahead and close this portion of the public hearing. Members of the public are more than welcome to remain for the remaining part of our meeting, if you wish. We'll be moving on to our work study, again, on the kind of 2018 annual comprehensive plan amendment. I think Mr. Best, yep. You up next?
Great, thank you.
Thank you, everybody who was here tonight. Thank you for testifying. You aren't hurting our feelings if you take this as a moment to leave. Mr. Best will not be offended.
Absolutely not. And again, I extend my appreciation to folks who testified as well. So without the visual aids tonight, there is a handout with some slides. If I could just point you to a couple of those as we begin here. Page 3 of that handout, the bottom right corner, is a schedule of planning commission meetings.
Excuse me, where are we?
This handout?
Yes, I understand. Which page?
Page 3. And the page numbers are kind of half printed there. Apologies for that. So tonight we will continue work study. Following tonight, public comments and written comments will be accepted through August 7th. And then we will be preparing those comments for you all for your August 21st meeting, where we'll begin consideration. You'll also get for that meeting on the 21st draft findings of fact that we can work from and revise as consideration proceeds. So tonight, what I was hoping to do with this work study is you began by discussing providing questions to staff. We've received questions from Commissioner Nevins and some questions from Commissioner Gonzalez-Harless as well. So we welcome those questions to continue to come in, and we'd appreciate those to be received by August 7th. So like public comments, we can turn those around and provide those to you for August 21st. But tonight, and if we can turn to the last page of this handout, for this work study. All of the amendments have now been introduced in work study. There's been some questions and discussion already about some. And what I would like to suggest, Chair, is to walk through them and see if there are any questions now amongst commissioners. We have some of the lead staff here tonight, some who are not here tonight. So we'll do our best to be able to answer questions or queue those up for written responses so we can get through some initial questions about anything procedural, anything background, anything factual with the materials. If there's supporting materials that you'd like to see in addition, like the development agreement, for example, that we already discussed, those things we can all get ready for you well in advance for the 21st. So if that's acceptable,
I think that sounds like a plan.
Proceed. Okay. Thank you. So to make this easy, we can just march through the binder, starting with tab 2. I'll ask David Fort from the Public Works Department to join me. So if there are any questions about the procedural history related to this or background, factual stuff or supporting documents, we'd be happy to take those.
Can you move the microphone a little closer?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. So on the non-motorized facilities plan update amendment, tab 2.
And the just as if we have any questions right now, but we can send them in separately.
Absolutely. You can certainly follow up with written comments by August 7th. We'd appreciate. And if you would like to discuss this in more detail, you can certainly contact David Ford or any of the staff for listed in any of these amendments for follow-up discussion.
I guess first off, I can just take a moment to the commission. Does anybody need a break before we move through this work study? Anybody? Are we all good? All right. Getting that out of the way, I think anybody have questions on this non-motorized plan? I think we're good. Let's go ahead and move on.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Mr. Best does not get off the hot seat quite that fast.
All right. So moving to tab three, the Kingston Urban Village Center amendments. Questions or information requests related to that? Commissioner Murphy.
Just a general question, although it applies to this one, I think it comes up more than once. In a county-sponsored amendment such as this, who did the SEPA when it shows determination of non-significant?
So the SEPA checklist was prepared by long-range planning staff,
okay,
and then that was reviewed, and the determination was issued by the SEPA official, or who also works in DCD, but did a separate review of that.
So my only question, I guess, internally is, you know, just a verification of checks and balances that is at some level an arm's length transaction. Right, I mean, SEPA passes because we wrote it and we're proposing it. Right, there's my concern.
Right.
So I'd just be curious to know how that is balanced or checked, whether that's a Ms. Garbo question, I don't know, but
yeah.
I just wanted to say it out loud.
So it's a universal issue that's faced by any agency doing a non-project action. So state agencies, any local government faces that. So just to give you an example of how we did this, that SEPA official attended a site visit with staff, so they both were able to see the sites where there's site-specific review that occurred in some of these. So they both got that exposure to the site. Our long-range planning staff prepared the checklist, and that was handed off to the SEPA official who made the determination. A few cases where there's procedural questions about, for example, the Ulan Tree Farm Amendment previously went through EIS process. And so under SEPA, there's some procedural questions about how we either adopt by reference or reference those prior documents and so forth. There was consultation between Long Range Planning staff, the SEPA official, and our attorney about how to properly proceed.
Any other questions? Okay, moving right along, that takes us to number four, the George's Corner Lambert.
Okay, George's Corner Lambert. So as part of one of the handouts that you received tonight that includes responses to Commissioner Nevin's questions, there's also a clarification on the first page of that that I just wanted to bring to your attention. It kind of elaborates and expands on conversation you had on the 17th, more generally about how a county, you might decide what's county sponsored versus what's site specific. So I tried to elaborate on that for you. If there's any more questions about that, I'm happy to entertain that and happy to get into any details related to George's point.
Mr. Shattuck?
I didn't see you in any comments in opposition to this proposal. Have any come in recently from, I think it was about a week ago?
I'm not aware of any written comments that we've received on this.
Looks like we have no more questions on that one. Go to number five.
Okay. So this is number five, is the public facility designations and park classifications update. Specifically, this is the redesignation of the properties acquired in North Kitsap, the Port Gamble Heritage Forest properties.
questions on this one? Seeing no hands raised, let's go ahead and keep moving to number six.
Okay, number six. Is the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Plan update? And Stephen Starlin from Parks Department was not able to be here tonight. Hopefully I can answer any questions you have, but if not, we'll follow up with him.
Any questions? All right.
Okay.
Questions for you.
We are moving right along. All right. Tab number seven is affordable housing. Again, staff from the Human Services Department were unable to be here tonight. And we'll coordinate with them if there are any questions now or follow-up questions regarding this.
Any questions? I don't see any hands raised.
Okay.
Let's go ahead to number eight.
So tab number eight are the clarifying edits. And Commissioner Nevins had several questions regarding these, and those responses are provided in your handout. And if I can back up 1 second, George's Corner, Commissioner Gonzalez-Harless requested some supplemental documents related to that late this afternoon. I think you should have all received an email with the first installment of that. We'll get the rest of that to you as soon as possible. And if there are any follow-up questions related to that, we're happy to entertain those now or in writing.
Any questions? All right. It looks like we'll get the answers or we can access the questions that were posed. Mr. Nevin, anything else? Right. To number nine.
Okay. Number nine, we move into our site-specific applications. So this is the Richardson request in the Central Kitsap UGA. Commissioner Shep?
I just had, again, a question about TDRs. Yeah, you say, hey, we're going to approve something, but you've got to get a TDR. And I just don't see that we're far enough along in the TDR process to really believe that this is doable in the short run. But is that requirement illusory right now?
For the record, Darren Gurney with Kitsap County DCD. The TDR requirement is still going to apply. They have the ability to acquire the TDR over a five-year period, at which point we start our comp plan update for the larger update process. We do have one person who has identified that they want to go through as a sending site, and we are running them through as probably our initial application here in the near future. So did you have an additional question on the program itself? Or?
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. Having one sending property doesn't really sound like a TDR program. So
the site that we have that we're working with, hopefully here in the near future, and I say near future, hopefully within the month, that site can potentially yield up to 20 development right credits or transfer development right certificates, where the application. The two applications that you have before you, I believe, are for six and for four. So one sending site can have many transfer development right credits.
If I may add to that, Dave Ward with DCD. the TDR, transfer development rights, has been in statute for a number of years now. So this is not a new thing. What is new as of last year is Board has now passed the resolution that establishes those transfer ratios so that way we can move the program forward. We recognize that this is in a pilot basis at this point, so we're looking at these first couple as kind of test balloons to get a better sense of how the mechanics of the program will work and how the actual transfers and easements and such will all fall into place. So we recognize that there will be some learning along the way, but this is just the next step towards what we do hope will become a genuine program.
Mr. Nevin. Yes, on this issue, on this particular application, cites the boundary line adjustment process, and I appreciate the answers that were given. And I have read carefully all of the information that's presented in the material. I will, at the end of this meeting, for the good of the order, be providing one pager because it's obvious we don't have enough paper to read. We'd like to have just a little more. And I will also give another good of the order bit at that time, just to let you know that boundary line adjustments is my current hobby horse, and I will ride this for a few more weeks.
Ms. Allen.
And I'm going to echo the concern about the TDR program, or lack thereof, today. While I appreciate that a sending site might yield as many as 20 TDRs, what if it doesn't? And we have an automatic expiration of the amendment in the event that the TDRs aren't acquired within 5 years. And so I guess what I'm wondering is if there's a way to build in a mechanism for an extension or something based on a lack of TDR availability in the program that could be integrated into this to provide some, as we all know, certainty in land use is our goal. To make sure that it's the applicant is not on the hook for something that they have absolutely no control over.
Right. And to that question, my understanding is that we were doing that 5-year time frame because in that next cycle of the comprehensive plan, we could actually look at that land use designation and make that change if it is appropriate at that time to do so without the TDR requirement. Okay. During the comprehensive plan update, the 8-year cycle.
Yeah, I guess it's
which is almost a de facto extension, but it does not yield the predictability that I think you're looking for.
Exactly.
Yeah, we do acknowledge the concern, and that's why we built that window of time in. And, again, this is there's a bit of a learning process that's going to go along with developing this into a full-fledged program.
Seeing no other questions, we'll go ahead and hit number 10.
Okay, number 10, this is the Yulin Tree Farm site-specific application.
Can you guys both hold that microphone when it's your turn?
Yeah. Okay, sorry. Tab number 10, the Yulin Tree Farm site-specific application.
When I look at this one compared to what we're doing with the next one, I note that the mineral overlay is going to require a change from permitted to CUP. But when we're doing a proposed forest resources with mineral overlay, aggregate extraction is going to be a permitted use as opposed to a CUP use. Is there a reason for the distinction?
Yeah, so to clarify that, currently in our code, there are kind of two pathways to becoming a mineral resource extraction site. The first is represented by the Yulin situation. They applied for a conditional use permit first, which was required for, in for context, there are multiple sites across their 1,000-plus acre property, right? So the conditional use permit was required for some of the other zoning designations of those other sites. So they got the conditional use permit first, and then were, through the development agreement and the I believe the hearing examiner's decision, also instructed to get a mineral resource overlay for this particular, for this and another two of the quarries in the overall property. So that's one pathway, is to get the permit first and then get the appropriate designation. The other pathway is represented by the Culbertson application that's before you. Request the designation first and then pursue the permit. Why in Culbertson we're also suggesting to change it to a conditional use under the mineral resources zone is to provide equal parity on those two pathways. Currently, the Culbertson pathway, you'd request the designation, and under the mineral resources zone, it's an outright permitted use, the mineral extraction. So we're changing that to a conditional use so that the neighbors, the community, gets the same parity of participation that an applicant like the Yulin Tree Farm went through.
So, but without the code change, if I have forest resource property, I come into this process to get a mineral overlay, I now have a permitted use. I don't have to do a CUP at all, period. Right?
If your underlying zone is forest resources, and you
so
add the mineral resource.
Why wouldn't it be a, why the distinction, whether just the thought is there'd be no neighbors who would have a concern about a mineral overlay in a forest resource zone, or why do we treat those two differently?
Well, it's not the underlying zone that creates the difference between permitted and conditional. It's the mineral resource overlay that shifts it to permitted use. So what our amendment, our additional amendment in Culbertson is doing is if you're designated and zoned a mineral resource overlay, currently it's an outright permitted use to extract gravel and quarry. The change will make it a conditional use. So whichever of these two pathways to an active mine operation you end up pursuing, both ways, you'd go through a conditional use permit process.
And I'm looking at 602 good. Forest Resource Mineral Overlay. It's P under your proposal. And so I don't, but maybe it'd be, I'll
okay.
take another look at it and try
so,
to sort it out.
Okay. So let's go to
602 Forest Resources with
Mineral Resources. Okay. So you're looking at attachment C1.
I'm, you see 505 and attachment C.
So page 505, attachment C1 in your binder, it's the last document under tab 10. At the bottom, under resource land uses, use number 602, aggregate extraction sites for the forest resource lands is permitted. There is a footnote on that. And Darren, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think right here. There's a footnote on that extraction is limited to up to two acres in support of forest road development.
Whoops.
All right. Yes. Apologies.
Wake everybody up.
All right. So then what I'm missing is the footnote number there and a reference
yes,
to the footnote.
Yes, I believe so.
That is correct. It would be footnote number 4.
Our apologies for not having that in the table for clarity.
And so that would be, when we actually adopt it, footnote number 4 will be referenced on the document we're adopting.
Okay.
Thank you. That clarifies.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry for the lack of clarity.
I think Mr. Nevin was waiting.
Yes, it's connected with all of the mineral resource applications now and in the future. The different paths are available, but one of the things we have in the comp plan is a policy to determine if adequate mineral resources are available for the projected needs from currently designated mineral resource lands. And of course, that study hasn't been done. And it seems to me that there are, as I fly with Google over the county, I see lots of mineral resources, land that are disturbed in some manner or way. And I'm just curious if there's any program or thought that the, that DCD or someone might eventually get around to determining needs before we allocate additional mineral resource lands. Any comments on that?
So my understanding from talking with staff who have had long tenure at the county is that's been a long time desire to have that study done that has not been completed. There's no timeline to my knowledge to do that study, and that may be an issue for the county over the long term that we need to rectify. There is acknowledgement by the department that that analysis needs to be done. With regards to these specific applications and reviewing mineral resource site-specific applications, the in response to one of your questions, we did cite Administrative Code of Washington, which allows for the county to consider a request by landowners outside of a countywide analysis. So that under that purview is how we're reviewing site-specific applications. But the need for that countywide analysis is there.
Yeah. It seems like we go through a determination of need for buildable lands, and we do it for commercial areas and a whole bunch of other things, but we don't do it for this. So.
Jim Swenson, for the record, a couple of things. I think the Department of Natural Resources may have some information available about mineral resource availability and activity and permitting in the county. But that's certainly not a definitive source, but it is. They may have some useful information. My other question is, has there been opposition expressed to Uland other than by Mr. Stanfill, representing the Chico Creek Task Force?
I haven't reviewed all of the written comments that have been received. To my knowledge, Chico Creek Task Force have been the only commenters. There may be some that I have not seen.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Ms. Buskirk, that we end up getting, I think, a matrix of public comment once it's closed, period?
Right. Yes.
So and for the newer members, we did. It's a very nice matrix that's laid out that puts all the comments in one place. So we can check that.
Just so that would come up with prior time for us before we meet again.
Yeah,
okay.
You'll get all the comments organized in a matrix for the August 21st meeting.
Any other questions? Moving on to number 11.
All right. Number 11 is the site-specific application for Culbertson, another mineral resource overlay.
So my question here again is the same in the last section. Mineral aggregate extraction sites with the rural or on rural protection mineral resource overlay is shown as permitted. I'm assuming that's because there's a footnote 4. I guess I'm not understanding if we're saying we're changing the code to require conditional use permit. And then is this P only related to road construction then?
So the P under the proposed zone, rural protection with mineral resource overlay, that under this proposal would change to a C. So this is reflecting what the current requirements are.
So the proposed zone is not what you're proposing. It's what actually is. So I'm looking at the very last section,
page 505, attachment C4.
Proposed zone.
Yes.
And so it's a permitted aggregate extraction site is permitted.
Right.
As opposed to conditional.
Yes. And I apologize if it's not clear. This attachment is intended to just document what's in existing code. Attachment A depicts the change proposed in the amendment, which would be to change the P that you see there to a C. Okay. So, I'm sorry. Not attachment A. which attachment B4. In the other county-sponsored amendments, it's attachment A. I apologize. For this amendment, it's attachment C3, shows the strikeout underlying language of the proposed amendment, which would change the categorical use 602 aggregation extraction sites under the mineral resource overlay zone from a P to a C. So, therefore, whatever the underlying zone is, once a mineral resource overlay is placed on top of it, it would be, if this is adopted, conditional use for mineral extraction.
I'm following you.
Okay.
And again, this is, you're trying to make this consistent between the
yes.
two. Sort so of that, the two ways it could be done. You want to make sure it's consistent.
Correct. And we want to ensure that the community has the opportunity to participate in the conditional use permit process, and the county has the authority to place conditions on these projects as appropriate. There's also discussion in the staff report about how coordination, the process is somewhat coordinated between the county and the Department of Natural Resources, and they're both are permitting authorities for a mine operation.
And just to follow up on Commissioner's question, as I look at, I just, maybe it's a comment that Exhibit C4 is confusing, I think, just on its face. Okay. You have two columns, one is proposed zone, and the other one is a current zone. So I'm seeing a comparison of what we have now and what you're proposing to do. And it seems to me that the backward, what you're proposing is to add a conditional use, and what you have now is no conditional use with a mineral overlay.
Right.
So I don't know if they're flipped, if they're backwards, but but the table appears to address now and later.
Yeah.
And so if you could maybe work on the table a little bit,
yes,
just for transparency purposes, that would be very helpful.
I appreciate that. Just to clarify, the intention of the attachments like C4 were just to provide a full catalog comparison of the uses of existing under existing code, so that you and the public had an opportunity to see what uses might change with a change in designation. It doesn't capture, and it confuses, if there is a change in this list, it doesn't capture that and creates that confusion. So I appreciate you bringing that to our attention. We'll update how this is formatted so that it's more clear what the intent is here.
Ms. Gonzalez Harless had a question.
Just kind of in general, what's the criteria to not approve one of these? What would you have to see to not recommend approval?
For a mineral resource overlay?
Right.
I actually would like to think about that and provide a response to you more about that consultation with Liz Williams, who is the prior. Sorry, Commissioner Murphy. What I'd like to do is get back to you on that after consulting with Liz Williams, who's our lead staff on reviewing this application.
Okay. And I just was wondering if there was some standards where you look at it and go, well, there's these impacts to people and environment. I mean, because it doesn't seem like there's any downside in these staff reports. Everything's getting approved. Also, why wouldn't you look at something like this, especially when there's a lot of neighbors and a lot of real issues here, and go, well, maybe not the whole thing needs to be mineral overlay. Maybe we need to look at something with where we put that overlay on this specific parcel, because I think it's more unique on the neighborhood impacts. I mean, I'm really affected by seeing that woman's house with the cracked walls and foundation, and that's where I'm at with this. I mean, I just can't imagine we can go forward with this.
Well, and I think what we would want to consider in preparing a more thorough response to you would be, you know, at a land use designation level, what is reviewed and what those decision criteria might be versus a conditional use permit at that detail of level. Certainly, through this amendment, you could shift where the boundaries are drawn proposed amendment to potentially pre-mitigate some of those impacts.
So by moving the overlay away from the neighbor, but allowing for a portion of that, did you guys consider that?
That's an option to consider.
I'm asking, did staff consider it?
Well, I would want to consult with Liz Williams, who prepared the staff report, in more detail on that. But also in consideration, that would be reviewed under the conditional use permit. And I think, as one of the commenters said earlier, there could be mitigation requirements of setbacks, berm heights, and other things that could change the overall size of the footprint within the property. So even though the entire property is designated, the actual footprint of the operation, the nature of the operation, the duration of the operation, those sorts of things will all be conditioned through the conditional use permit. So there is a distinction that we'll try to articulate for you about what level of detail is analyzed in this legislative process versus what would be analyzed in
the conditional use permit. Right, but I'm thinking about these neighbors. It seems like they're getting pretty well organized. It seems like the county needs to bring the landowner and the neighbors together and find a way to make this work at this point versus some way down the road when there's a CUP, when we all know that that's when it's going to get really heated. I think you could mitigate some of the issues right now by having a community meeting.
Mr. Stenson.
Years ago, when I was a county employee, the director of the department and I paid a visit to a woman living in the vicinity of this quarry when they were blasting. She showed us a large hole in her roof and a broken screen on a big TV, and she had her arm in a bandage as a result of a rock fragment coming through the roof. So I kind of share some of what Karen is suggesting here, the optics, even though a conditional use permit is going to be required. What's the probability of a CUP being denied by the nature of the beast? They're just conditioned, aren't they? I guess it's possible to deny one, but it would be difficult if this were approved. So I've heard a lot of testimony the last two hearings, and I'm somewhat sensitive to what some of these folks are saying, and there may be an approach such as what Karen's suggesting that might be productive.
Yeah, it's a good suggestion. Thank you.
And we've heard from lots of neighbors, and sometimes when I listen to them, I think the impression I get, Gina Busker for the record, is it the county's position that, you know, this decision needs to be made and then sort of down the road, then the testimony that we're hearing now is more applicable at some later time? Because it's hard to hear and separate out their very true and real concerns from what the county is trying to do. You know, I don't know if that's a result of this is just a later process when they'll be heard by the county and those concerns will be weighed by the county, let's say, for a conditional use permit, or is it more the county's position in these type of land use issues of, hey, the neighbors being unhappy is a private lawsuit, nuisance suit kind of issue? Ms. Allen.
And just to kind of dovetail on that, I understand the county's position here that the conditional use permit process, which will ultimately be the what brings the mineral overlay to this particular property, what allows them to open the quarry, that is a very detailed process with a hearing examiner, with public testimony, and crafting of conditions of approval or a denial based on whether the mitigation, you know, the neighbor's concerns can be mitigated appropriately. I mean, some of the things that you're proposing, like, you know, trimming down the area of the mineral overlay, things like that, are certainly something that the hearing examiner would have before him or her as a tool to mitigate the impacts for the neighbors. But what I'm hearing is, because this is a site-specific amendment request, that, not that I think it would be necessarily a good idea, but this body could trim the boundaries and approve a smaller.
I'm not aware
overlay
of something that would bar you from considering that as an option. So
okay.
it could be an alternative.
I thought that would be beyond, it's pretty much beyond the scope of the task here, which is, you know, the overarching policy decision, with the details being, I don't know, right, kicked down the road is the term, but dealt with in the appropriate forum later on.
Well, it's largely a question of land use versus a project-specific proposal. So if we were to shift the context of this just a little bit and say we were considering
a shift of a property from a commercial use to an industrial use. We're looking in this context, in this legislative context, at the shift of the land use. But we don't know yet what kind of an industrial use will land on the property, what will be manufactured, or what will be, how that, you know, what specific industry might end up there. But we're just looking at this question, at this limited question of what is the change, what is the impact of the shift in land use. In this particular example, it's a little bit obvious because it's a quarry. Everybody knows that it's a quarry because it's an existing operation. So while it's really tempting to get into, okay, what are the hours of operation? What is the mitigation for the various aspects of its operation? We, in fact, from a land use perspective, don't know that yet.
But what I guess my point is, what we know is it's not working for these neighbors as it sits right now, and those are real facts, and we're looking at expanding it. So I'm looking at, why would I want to expand it? And I don't know that you guys have actually looked at, well, you know what my question is there. What's the criteria to deny it?
I think Mr. Murphy had his hand up, and then Mr. Svensson.
So if I was to look at, for example, Culbertson map 4B, it does appear in the northeast corner that you can partially hatch a parcel. Right, that it's not a, doesn't have to be an entire parcel that is hatched in the overlay.
Which portion of?
I'm just looking at the blue, the light blue, the.
Okay.
I can't even read the letters, but, you know, the northeast corner of that, sorry, northwest corner of that, hits parts of parcels. Or is it exact to property lines?
I think those are on property lines.
Okay, so my question from what I think I heard Ms. Caran say is, you know, the idea that, well, maybe if we abut residential, that there's a 300-foot section from that property line that can't be hatched. Is that a legally feasible consideration?
Yes.
It is. Okay. So I did understand that correctly.
Yeah, I
understood. And I see both sides because I also, as an architect, I understand that I'm trying to look at this as a commissioner first and say, does the zoning make sense for the county?
The
process of getting to opening and operating something is way more rigorous through the conditional use permit process.
What I would want to look at is that even if you excluded portions of the property from the overlay, whether that would fully achieve a setback or not. Because the underlying zone does have other allowed uses, and we need to look at that in more detail to see if the effect would actually achieve your intent.
Transpire to the, yeah.
So, go ahead.
I heard several people testify there's 40 housing units proposed in this vicinity. Do you guys have a handle on where that is? And, whether there maybe should be something stated on the building permits that, hey, this home is being built in proximity of an expanded gravel rock quarry?
Right. So I heard that several times tonight as well. I made a note that I wanted to look into where those are and what stage that is, if that's already in permitting or not. But yes, there is under existing code properties, and I don't know the exact distance, but properties within a certain distance of a mining operation are recorded a notice of title when they're permitted that they're within a certain distance of an active mine.
Mr. Chat,
I don't think we have any information as a commission that would allow us to try to move boundaries. Again, we're sitting here saying, well, we just move this away from, we move the overlay away from the houses. Hey, I'm the rock quarry operator. I've got a great idea. I'll put my rock crusher right next to the houses, okay, because they can't use the mining. So I, in terms of our willy-nilly deciding, hey, we're going to change what's being proposed today based on the information before us, I don't think we've got any information to make that kind of a recommendation to the commissioners.
And again, to clarify, we're just trying to identify issues that we can provide answers and information to. We're not trying to deliberate or get to a decision tonight. What I'm taking away from this conversation is what would be really useful is more clarity about what measures could be considered at this legislative level of this process, and what measures are typically considered and implemented at a conditional use permit process, so that you can be informed about what's appropriate to consider now versus what to assume the conditional use will consider.
What I'm looking for also, and it's kind of hard to tell from the aerial, and I can't remember if it was this site or one of the other ones, but weren't they expecting this to be played out at the mine, where the mine actually is, that they're, because they're trying to expand on the property, where the area that's actually being mined right now in relationship to the neighbors, and when the estimated time for that to be played out? Because I think it's in a couple of years, and then they have to begin reclamation on that area. So
if they were going to close down operations, they would need to reclaim the site.
Right, but I don't know where it is on this plan. I mean, the aerial isn't really clear.
Right, and I'm sorry we don't have the visual dates tonight. But on map 2, in attachment A, on the lower right quadrant of that map, almost just above center is an area where you can see stockpiles and bare earth. And that's the general area of the existing active operation. And to moving northwest of that, there is a power line corridor that you can see kind of extending diagonally across the map. That's the power line easement that was referenced in public comments today. And then the subject properties, which are outlined in black, you can see that those were logged recently in this photograph. And the power line easement is the green area on the southeast corner of the subject.
Okay, I'm oriented now.
So what I understood from testimony tonight and from the applicant's materials, they would be transporting underneath the power line easement to the existing quarry site where operations would continue with the rock crushing and so forth there. So the existing site would not be reclaimed because it would still remain an active part of the mine operation. But the actual extraction would extend into the subject properties if this was all approved through a final conditional use permit and a DNR permit.
So back up a second. Did you say the existing mine would not be reclaimed?
It would not be reclaimed at this point because it would remain active as part of the overall operation. But once the mine ceases to operate, it is required to be reclaimed under state law.
So how many acres? I mean, that's probably something you're going to have to look at.
Well, the subject properties are 69 acres.
But the actual
footprint of the mine?
Yeah.
That's, and my understanding is that's to be determined.
Okay.
And as we heard testimony today, the conditional use permit might place mitigation measures of buffer setbacks and berm heights and all of that, which then constrain the footprint of the actual extraction site. And then the reclamation is also would be designed for what the intended use of the property would be after mining is finished. So the intended use is to go back to forest. That might be different than if the intended use is to convert it to future residential use, for example. So the reclamation plan.
Wasn't this part of the Gorst project? Isn't that supposed to be a residential?
So you're asking about the Gorst watershed plan and the subarea plan for Gorst. The watershed study, which looked beyond a 20-year horizon, did identify the subject properties as long-term residential use. That's beyond the 20-year horizon of the subarea plan. So the subarea plan and the urban growth boundary is below the subject properties. So I'm aware that when we were preparing the staff report for this, we did look at that very carefully and weighed whether this would interfere with that long-term plan or not. And the general timing sequence of mineral extraction and that conversion to residential beyond the 20-year horizon, they are very close to being around the same time horizon. So we did not see a conflict with the beyond 20-year plan for the area.
Any other questions? Yes, Ms. Allen.
Just one more. So just to go back up to the policy level for a minute, this is a site-specific amendment, but it will end up changing the code across the board for this particular use and changing what is now a permitted use to a conditional use. Now, if we were to deny this request, it would remain a permitted use.
It would. I think the department would like to carry that aspect of the amendment forward, regardless of the subject properties.
Is that feasible in
yes.
this process? Okay, that's my
yes.
concern.
It is proposed as part of the process. It's been subject to the public record, and you could deny part of this and approve that aspect. Recommend approval of that aspect. If that was the will of the commission.
Go ahead and move on, I think, to the final one, number 12.
Okay, tab number 12. This is the Hanley site-specific amendment in the Port Orchard UGA. We heard testimony on this one, both on the 17th and tonight.
Gina Buskirk, for the record, can I ask why? I know that the department indicated that you wanted to do sort of a survey of the entire area. But I can also understand the testimony I've heard from Mr. Hanley or anybody who's supporting his position that why, if everything is in line or in order for his request, why he should have to wait for the county to look at that entire area. I that was a thought that was crossing my mind, and I figured you might have an answer for that.
So for us as staff and as we discuss this here and at future meetings, it can be a challenge to clearly distinguish, understand the two aspects of what's happening on this property, and distinguish them and separate that there are two kind of decision processes that are happening. One is the request here for you to redesignate the property. The other, which is legislative, the other is an administrative process that's currently underway regarding code compliance and determining, you know, the legal conformity of the use and the establishment of the use and buildings on the site and so forth. So that's an administrative process related to existing code. There is some interrelationship between these two things. It is in certain cases it is very reasonable to address a non-conforming use issue by considering a redesignation of the property. And so that's where these two things relate. In addition, there are clearly other issues in the surrounding neighborhood that relate to the fire department being there, the Hanley operation being there, adjacent residential and mixed use developments or existing uses and proposed uses adjacent to this site that, you know, when we looked at all of that as we're reviewing this application, made us step back and say, there's more to this area that really needs to be considered, not just making a singular decision about this property, but looking at a zoning pattern here that really makes sense for the existing uses and what should be occurring here long term.
I think, and that brings up two things. So is there some type of potential zone, or not zone, code violation that's pending at all with regard to, let's say, the fire department or anything of that nature happening?
Not to my knowledge, no.
And does our decision in this particular site-specific application either bolster or hamstring the county's code enforcement case? I knowing that these two things are happening, I kind of feel as if it's almost like a quasi-judicial situation right. where we're this neutral party making a decision, but I'm feeling as if I don't know that the county's expecting us to make a decision that may simply may in fact bolster the county's code enforcement. And I don't know that I feel like that's the right basis for us to be making the decision on this.
Right. I don't think it's the department's intent at all to utilize this amendment process to influence the code compliance case in a negative way. I think to the contrary, our interest in recommending that we do an area-wide review gives us more flexibility in looking at zoning designations here that not only for this site, but for the neighborhood that would be appropriate. So, for example, there continues to be some disagreement about how to categorize the use on the Hanley property. The department contends strongly that it is a contractor storage yard, which is an industrial use, not allowed in a commercial zone, which is what the applicant requests. So in an broadening this to an area-wide review, we may be able to address some of the conflicts and uses that we would be concerned about with an industrial use and the adjoining properties by being able to look at the zoning overall and perhaps consider a zone where a contractor storage yard is a permitted use and the adjacent properties are zoned appropriately so there is not a concern about a conflict of uses long term.
Has this current use been going on a long time? And now I know that county is now doing code enforcement.
Yes.
So has it been a use that has been ongoing for quite some time without any code violation, without any notice to the owner? But now we have code enforcement officers, we meaning the county. And so now the county is taking action with what was already existing and happening for quite some time.
So the general answer to that is yes, the use has been occurring for a long time. The nature of activities there, buildings constructed and so forth, and whether those were permitted or not, I'm not privy to those details, so I'm sorry I can't provide those answers. That's what part of the subject of the investigation, so there is no determination at this point from the county's perspective on those matters.
Ms. Allen?
Yeah, code enforcement, at least in my experience, is generally complaint-driven because nobody has the resources to go out and just look for code violations. Is that the case with this particular property?
That's correct.
Okay, so there, it was driven by neighbor complaints then?
It was initiated? It was initiated by a complaint, and then additional questions came up through that initial investigation that has led to a broader review.
Okay, thank you.
Aaron Murphy, for the record. Correct me if I'm wrong, this is also a site-specific application that has come before us before. True? That this parcel was looking at, or is that not true?
So it
sounded like a similar situation to one we had.
So I would need to verify this. The urban high-density residential, which this is currently zoned, I believe was a prior site-specific application in the early 2000s. I would want to verify that and to make sure that's a correct fact. This particular request for this particular property, I'm not aware of coming before the county previously.
Did I hear what the timeline is for the larger area review? and if there are leaning tendencies in relation to the changes around it?
So timeline-wise, we're proposing that this would be docketed in 2019. And the nature of an area-wide review would likely result in a decision being made in 2020. But we'd begin the review process in 2019.
So what happens in the meantime?
What happens in the meantime is the existing zoning would stand, their conforming or non-conforming status would be, I believe the department would want to come to a determination regarding that, but would defer any enforcement action pending the outcome of the amendment process, I believe is what we are.
So any enforcement or any ordering to halt activities would be also deferred then until 2020?
That's correct. The exception might be if there are any life safety issues identified through the enforcement action. Those might be required to be corrected as life safety issues.
Is that something that, I think maybe there's deferral, but are those specifics in the report or what's recommended or something that the business can count on?
I guess I'm not.
I'm saying, is that in writing anywhere or is that just sort of the suggestion that, you know, There's two things. You've got your code enforcement and you've got this process. So are you speaking on behalf of the code enforcement process to indicate that you would stop the enforcement or put it on hold until 2020? Or is that just DCD saying we think this is a good idea, but we...
So that's what DCD has discussed with Mr. Hanley and his agent, Bill Palmer, and have offered that to them as how we would want to proceed with this area-wide review. We'd want to come to a determination regarding the code compliance, but then defer that exception of any life safety issues for the outcome of the area. Jim, if you want to clarify or correct, please.
So Jim Bulger, Department of Community Development. So during our meeting with the applicant and their representatives, we did talk about the staff recommendation of deferring this to a future comprehensive plan amendment cycle, and the department indicated that we would probably suspend any further action on the code compliance issues, but related to this case, with the understanding that there also wouldn't be any expansion of the use until it was resolved, but we wouldn't curtail any current activities that are going on there, with the exception of they do have some structures that have been built. They came under a recreational RV storage unit, which is now being used, I think, to support some of the operations. And we did indicate that we want to go and do an inspection of that facility because it was never finaled based on the permit that came in. And so we do want to make sure it's a safe working environment for the employees. And we do have a site visit with some of our inspection and building crew, and I'll be attending that. I believe it's this Friday or next Friday. I just got back from vacation yesterday, so I'm still getting back into it. So we intend to go and view the site. And I think during Mr. Palmer's testimony today, I heard him say that he's not, just against the deferment of this. One of his issues was really just the uncertainty that proposes. But on the face of it, he didn't have a problem with the area-wide. He just didn't want to put his client into a pending status for some indefinite period of time, and I understand that.
But I think I also heard his testimony that he believed everything was in order for...
I think he contends that under a commercial designation that he could justify the current uses of that area. We do have a letter that was submitted as part of the code compliance case that did indicate that he believes it is a contractor storage yard. But even under a commercial designation, that remains a non-conforming use, which would prevent any expansion. It was my understanding from the meeting we had with him and his clients, the Hanleys, that they would like to expand the operation there to cover more of the properties that are involved in this redesignation. And even under that commercial designation, they can't expand it because that nonconformity really constrains the footprint of the use. It doesn't just apply to the entire parcel.
So what
what should the designation be to fit him?
Well, we think that, well, there's a couple of things that could take place. He could change the nature of the activities that are going on there. Right now, he has more of a retail operation in downtown Port Orchard. If there was more kind of retail focused, where our commercial, heavy commercial designation in our code is that this is a place that brings in shoppers and provides those kind of retail services. If they had some retail that was co-located in that vicinity, that might make it easier to place it into a commercial designation. You do have business center, which is a designation which would allow a contractor storage yard. We keep talking industrial, but there are industrial is another one. So the fire station is certainly a high visible, high intensity activity. It's there on an overlay. That's essentially the underlying zoning is a residential zone, but it's there under a public facility overlay. So, you know, looking at that in its entirety is really what the department is advocating. And we, you know, we don't have an issue with the building or the business per se, and it's been very successful there, and we want to make it so that they can continue to do business there but still recognize the compatibility issues with future uses. And I think our recommendation was also echoed by the information that the city of Port Orchard provided, which is kind of right on the edge of this property just to the west. So
any other questions? I think we made it through all 12.
So just to remind you, if you have any additional questions that come up as you think about these to read through the materials more, please provide those to us by August 7th, and then we can provide the entire commission with responses to those for deliberations beginning the 21st. Regarding deliberations, we found out today that the Board of County Commissioners meeting schedule has significantly changed. We found out today that the Board of County Commissioners schedule has significantly changed. That impacts the review of these amendments. Based on tonight, I'm hoping that deliberation by the commission might be able to be completed in two future meetings rather than three. And if that's possible, then we might be able to keep the overall legislative process on track to conclude before the end of the year. Not to rush you through the work, but if we can complete the work on the 21st and the following meeting, that would be my hope.
I think so the next thing I have on the agenda is the administrative update. That's separate apart from what you were already talking about.
Separate issue.
Okay. Welcome back from vacation.
Yeah, thank you. There's no administrative update for the Planning Commission. I think it was a holdover from the last meeting when we talked about the new staff report format. Again, we invite any comments on that or any modifications to it for subsequent reports.
That brings us to if there is anything left for the good of the order.
Of course.
Mr. Yes. Nevin, would you like the floor?
Thank you. I have two short items. One of them is I will not be in attendance on the 21st, and so it's all up to y'all to do that. I'll keep track of what goes on, and I'll be up to speed when I come back, but I won't be around. I'll be off the grid. In the meantime, I know that there'll be lots of water under the bridge. In order to keep my oar in the water, I am going to submit a comment to each of the commissioners, and I have several copies for staff. I'll put it out with a on online. Amanda will get it, and she'll distribute it as necessary. If not for consideration now, because it is deliberation sort of stuff, and we're not doing deliberation.
Excuse me for interrupting. So you won't be here for the deliberation?
That is correct.
And is anybody else not able to attend that date? So just an administrative reminder that actions related to the comprehensive plan need a majority of the full membership. So seeing as how we're down by one, you'll need five people at a minimum to approve?
I don't think you're allowed to. It's a majority of the nine, whether the positions are filled or not.
Right. So you'll need five to carry a recommendation. Just want to make that point so that everybody comes in and understands that you'll be playing with one hand behind your back.
Anything else, Mr. Nevin?
That's it.
All right. Anything else from anybody else before we adjourn? All right. And at 7:35, we will adjourn.